Hello, podcast people. James here, back from Hong Kong. I'll tell you more about it in the podcast proper. But a little warning there, we've got a new guest on the show this week, another person from PG making his podcast debut. However, that person didn't have a fancy mic or anything, and also the recording at his end broke down a little bit, so we've only got my MP3 Skype backup. So his voice doesn't sound quite as polished as perhaps some of the others. Don't worry, we'll get that sorted in future episodes if and when he appears. That's all. Thanks for listening, as always. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 493. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me today, for the very first time, it's Cameron Bald.
Hello, 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 everybody.
I should probably clear up the fact that Dan's house got struck by lightning or something. I wish I was making that up, but it's kind of true. His fuse boxes are all gone because there's been a bit of weather here in the UK. I don't know if you're American listeners or anywhere else around the world. We've been having storms and 38 degree temperatures in London, which is entirely normal and not at all worrying in a global warming sense. An impending doom. Are you looking forward to the impending doom, Cameron?
I'll welcome it with open arms, if I'm quite honest. No, it's worrying. It's not natural, this temperature.
Not for our sort, no. So no. We're struggling. And as a result, Dan's fuse box got completely blown out, and he's running on mobile data only until Wednesday. So that's great.
Yeah.
And Matthew is away somewhere. He didn't tell me where. So as a result, we've drafted in a relative newcomer to both the podcast and the site at large, Cameron. So when did you start working for PG, and what is it you do? Where did you come from? Who are you?
So I started as an intern last year, back in, I think it was September. I was just doing like sort of little news pieces and whatever, and then occasionally started getting reviews. And from there, I went on to do a lot of promo stuff for the sales team. And now I am the news editor at Pocket Gamer, and I also do some stuff for AppSpy as well, what was previously the sort of video arm of Pocket Gamer.
Yes.
But yeah, so I just kept busy doing news and reviews, really, the occasional little feature here and there.
Well, it's been lovely to have a dedicated news person back, because we had Em a while back, and then other people have been subbing here and there since then, but having an actual news feed for reals, it's been nice, because I get all my news from you now. You're an essential part of my data collection on a day-to-day basis.
That's good to hear.
So any misinformation can be directed towards you.
Oh, so it can. Yes. Uh-huh. No, I'm wholly accurate in my reporting. I take it very seriously.
Oh, wow. So as regular listeners know, I was away in Hong Kong doing PGC Hong Kong. It all went very well, apart from the fact that I now have a chest infection. But that's what happens when you leave the country and shake hands with strangers. And I didn't bring my little gel thing, which you're supposed to do. But as I've said before, it comes off as the most aggressive, passive-aggressive thing ever when you shake someone's hand and then immediately produce a little alcohol gel to rub your hands. Because you're basically insinuating that they've got the plague. Mm. And I'm trying to make friends here, ultimately. So illness happened. But Hong Kong, holy cow, have you ever been out there to the east or anywhere close to it?
No, the furthest I've traveled is France by a bus. So no, I'm not very well traveled.
It's a very small amount east, mostly south, but a bit east.
Yeah.
So this was, we've been talking about weather in the UK. It's 35, 36 degrees in Hong Kong. But when you look at the apps, it's like 36 degrees feels like 48 because the humidity. I've never experienced anything like it. It's insane. You step out of any pair of doors from a hotel or whatever, and it's like wading through soup. It's unbelievable. I'm not well conditioned for heat growing up a bit in Scotland, as I'm sure you can sympathize with.
Oh, God, yeah.
So it was amazing. But what they do to counter that is they turn the air conditioning up everywhere else really, really high. So by turns, every door either leads you to Narnia or Fury Road. Like, you're just constantly jumping from insanely hot to freaking freezing, which may also have contributed to the chest infection. Who knows? But show was great. Place is fascinating. Really nice to go and wander around it. But glad to be back and recovering. And I'm just sweating here now instead with our 38 degree temperatures. Nice. So it's like I never left. But we've got a lot to cover because I did miss 2 weeks of the podcast. So we're going to dive straight in with information about Reigns getting a board game adaptation. We've got stuff about Two Point Hospital coming to mobile devices. Grainer Free Fire, the biggest mobile game you've probably never heard of. Plus, a whole bunch of new releases, including Sky, Children of the Light, Hyperlight Drifter. We've got Automachef, Civilization's new expansion, Flashback, and more. But first, the news. So the Reigns series is arguably one of the most popular mobile franchises, and arguably one of the ones that uses mobile to its fullest potential. It's a game that's all about swiping, gesturing. It's the Tinder of the gaming world. Only you're taking control of a kingdom and you're choosing to either lop off people's heads or cut off the money to the Vatican or just jab the Pope in the eye like that. Prick. Which makes this a strange bit of news, really, because Reigns is getting a board game adaptation. They're calling it Reigns the Council, and it's a multiplayer game where one of you takes control of the monarch, you play the king or queen, and then the rest of the players kind of are the people approaching the king or queen, as you know if you've ever played the game, where someone sullies in and goes, "Sir, we need money for the army," or they will revolt, and, "Oh God, the peasants are really poor and they can't eat any food. What should we do?" And then you have to make the decisions in the game, based by swiping, but in the board game, presumably, you have to say yes or no or whatever, and then it all gets tracked out on a board that's in the middle of the table. It's a weird bit of like reverse engineering this, I think, because as I say, the thing that makes Reigns so great is the fact that it works so beautifully on mobile. What do you think the potential of this as a board game is? Do you think it's worth like demaking it for something like this, or does this defeat the object of the game?
Yeah, no, I think it's like of all the big mobile games, this is probably one of the smartest to sort of adapt into a board game, because like, I don't know about you, but I've played a lot of sort of lying board games and they tend to be my favorite, just winding people up, stuff like Coup or Coup. I don't know, my brain's gone. But yeah, no, like the idea of just everybody scheming against the monarch, and like it's got some really good sort of board game creatives behind it as well. Like the people that worked on Skull and the Werewolves of Miller's Hollow, and the title will be pretty well known to a lot of people who play a lot of board games. Yeah, I think Reigns will transition pretty well. I'm not sure if you've played a lot of stuff like that previously.
I've played a few things that like require, I mean, like Two Rooms and a Boom is a good example of a game where you have to wander around and you're effectively just trying to deceive everybody. And all those games are great because they create those weird social interactions where you're taking familiar people, usually friends of yours, and forcing them into unfamiliar roles. And that's where a lot of the fun from board games comes from. Rather than just straight up rolling a dice and playing Snakes and Ladders or whatever, this kind of thing allows for like a little bit of role playing, a little bit of winding up your mates, which is always good. And that usually results in tension and then laughter and occasionally physical violence. I actually think you're right. It's a weird demake deconstruction, but with this, because it's a pressure situation where if every character is taking control of like a different member of state or something, one person playing as the church and one person's playing as the bank or something like that, then you are going to be forcing your friends to argue their corner.
Yeah.
And hopefully that will result in people getting really arsey with each other. I think it loses something maybe from the swipe mechanic, and it'll be an interesting thing to take it multiplayer, because it's always a single player game where you're just being approached by all of these cards. Yeah. So I think they'll have to do it right. And I think it's going to be fairly niche. But as you say, these guys have got pedigree, the folks behind it. Is it Herv Marley? Is that the name of the guys? The company that does it, I think?
Herv Marley, Bruno, I'm going to mess up his surname. Fiduti?
Fiduti, I would go with, I guess. Yes. But I'm assuming we'll that's maybe Italian and I'm mispronouncing it, but still.
Right.
So Reigns of the Council is the full name of it. It is currently in development. We're not sure at a specific release date, but apparently the Kickstarter campaign is coming for it later this summer. Mm-hmm. And I imagine, given the popularity of the game, this is one of those ones that will get funded quite quickly. So I'm saying it's as good as made, basically. So look out for that one if you are interested. Also, talking about conversions, Two Point Hospital, which is kind of a spiritual successor to Theme Hospital, although they couldn't use the name, obviously, because I don't know who owns the rights for Theme Hospital. But it was extremely popular with people who were massive fans of that original franchise, where it really carried on the legacy of it, and people said it felt like it gave you the same kind of sense of pressure and goofiness of just messing with people in wards, which is effectively what all these games are about, prodding these virtual people and putting them in uncomfortable situations. This is going to be coming over onto Switch for the first time, which is nice. Apparently it was, I think, August last year, like end of the year, it arrived on PC and everyone went mad for it. I haven't actually asked you yet. Are you a Switch guy? Are you a PC guy? Where do you fall?
I do a bit of everything. Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Switch recently, mostly because that's the sort of games I review are Switch games for Pocket Gamer.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I play a lot of Switch, a lot of mobile. I also have PS4, Xbox, Xbox One. Just pretty much every current piece of hardware, and I jump between them all.
You're a four quadrant player.
Yes, absolutely. No, so I'm very much looking forward to this because my PC up till now wouldn't have been able to run 2-point hospital. So I'll be picking this up on Switch when it comes along, because I've heard nothing but good things. And it's from a lot of the original developers of Theme Park and Theme Hospital and Lionhead Studios people as well, which is the Fable team.
That's right. That's kind of where Bullfrog came. Like, Bullfrog was the original Peter Molyneux studio, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then he went over onto Lionhead. So it is good to hear that the people involved in the original creation are involved in this, which possibly explains why people have found it so enjoyable. Mm-hmm. I've got a couple of friends who are like fanatical about them, specifically the roller coaster one.
Yeah, yeah. There was on, I think I played the one on 360. I can't, Theme Park. Uh-huh. It was like an early 360 game. I put a lot of time into that, but ever since then, yeah, they're games that really demand like dozens of hours of commitment if you really want to get the best out of them. And didn't really work with my student schedule back then to keep playing them.
I thought maybe, that's what maybe student schedules were for. They were built around gaming and drinking.
I don't know. Not when you're a film student, James. We're taking it very seriously, our study.
All about the art. Well, this version that's coming out will give you the DLC that came out later on the PC version. So it's the complete package, basically, which includes things like interior design features and character customization and bits and bobs like that. Again, not a concrete release date. We've got apparently sometime late 2019, and we're already in the tail end of it. So a couple of months, I would imagine. We're still waiting to find out whether it comes onto mobile, because these kind of games can work and they're not usually too graphically intensive. And so there's every possibility, but you know, we'll wait and see on that one. But in the meantime, if you're a Switch owner, you can look forward to that appearing soon. Finally, I want to talk a bit about this. So there's a game called Grainer Free Fire. Now, you guys may have already heard of this, I don't know, especially perhaps if you live somewhere in South America, you'll have heard of this. But it's been described by Dan Sullivan, our editor, as probably one of the biggest games that you've never played, for fairly good reason. So I hadn't heard of it. Now, granted, I'm not especially into the multiplayer battle royale scene, and I know from speaking to you, Cameron, that you're not like super into that field either.
Yeah, not really, no.
But it's obviously been blowing up hugely recently with the likes of Fortnite and PUBG and all the rest of it. And this is another one. And let's be clear, there have been so many clones of PUBG since it came out that, you know, we're just drowning in them either on mobile or on PC or whatever. So the fact that there's another one of these kicking around is not the story. The fact is that it's got 6.5 million hours of views on Twitch and YouTube within a week. It's generated 90 million revenue within Q1, which is the first quarter of the financial year, if you're not a horrible monetary nerd, which is insane. So we've got, like, there were 635,000 concurrent live viewers watching the final of a tournament on YouTube recently, which is the kind of thing that makes you go, all right, this is a big deal, I guess. So why have we never heard of it? But you can get this from the App Store and from Google Play, and it's got the editor's choice rating and all of that, but 20% of its player base is based in Brazil. The way that this one works is it's round-based, so there are 10-minute rounds and 50 players dropped onto the island. But the thing that makes it slightly different is you have a character system, so it's more like a hero shooter than the others. as opposed to just being random characters or skins that are dropped in, and maybe you can, you know, put on a new t-shirt or get a new gun or something like that. They actually have roles. There are just under 20 characters in the game, and you can choose whether you want, you know, like tanks or stealth or snipers and that sort of thing, which does put a slightly different flavor on it. I reckon that 10-minute round thing probably amps it up a little bit. I really want to play this, but I only just got back in the country, so I haven't had a chance yet. And there are some other modes as well. The thing that I find really interesting about this is that we do forget sometimes, or I do anyway, being in the West. We only get a sort of snapshot, a certain circle of the old Venn diagram of gaming that gets thrust in front of us. So what the Google Play Store shows us, or what the App Store shows us, or whatever. And these things are so region-specific that we can miss out on entire gaming movements, if you like, from other countries. And having just been to China, like, you know, one of the big things that they get over there in the East is lots of, you know, free-to-play MMO stuff. They were sort of light years ahead of us on that, which you might think is a good thing or a bad thing. But that is what dominates over there. And the idea of buying premium games is kind of, I guess, a bit like old-fashioned at that point. Well, here we're in the transitional phase where people still kind of, you know, bulk at free to play, but really it's still making all of the money. How have you found the transition from like premium to free to play multiplayer and stuff like that?
I suppose in some ways I certainly wouldn't have ever bought, and I've not played a lot of it, but like Fortnite, I don't think I would have paid for that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially at launch. It's a great way of just getting an initial player base in, and obviously a lot of people will drop out. But people that stick around in the case of Fortnite were, you know, heavily rewarded as that game sort of progressed and got better and better. It certainly damaged some games, but typically like games like Fortnite, I think I found a good middle ground in that it's a focus on cosmetics as opposed to sort of skill-based enhancements or whatever. And I want to go back to like what you were saying earlier about feeling like you know what's big in the world of games and then being completely stunned when something like Crossfire comes along. I don't know if you saw it at E3. It's this huge sort of Counter-Strike style game over in the East that I'd never heard of. I'm pretty sure nobody that I know had heard of it prior, that I'd spoken to afterwards. And it's just, yeah, like Arena Cross Free Fire. It's just this massive sort of like a cultural event style game that's been going since like 2007.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I'd never heard of it. And then when the trailer came up saying that it was going to be released here in the West, looking into it and finding out all the reasons behind why it's been such a hit in China and in the East is, it's just really interesting. I really like when that sort of thing happens. And then, yeah, Arena Free Fire seems to be another example of that.
You're right with the Crossfire thing, because, yeah, that thing started out like back in 2008, I think it was going.
Was it 8? Okay, I thought it was 7.
Yeah, it was a release in China, and it's Tencent again. Mm. Tencent, who are behind absolutely everything. Where even if you're not into games now, you'll be seeing Tencent popping up at the beginning of movies because they've like branched out into movie studios and they're funding loads of stuff because they are that big. It is insane how many fingers they have in every single pie imaginable, including like publishing PUBG and things over there. And Fortnite, the Blue Studio, Blue Team, I think is that? I forget what they are, but the guys who are behind Fortnite like is partially owned by Tencent or something like that. There's a weird crossover there where they have interests in both games and they're massive competitors, so it's a bit strange, certainly for the mobile version. But I find it fascinating, and it's always a little wake up when you're like, huh, what? Did you hear?
Sure.
When you hear this game and someone's like, oh yeah, like literally an entire country's playing this and you've never heard of it.
Yeah.
And you can get involved. It's available on the App Store. It's just not really being pushed to the top of our app stores here in the UK or in the States, but you go elsewhere and it's the biggest thing. So if you fancy trying a battle royale shooter with a bit of a different flavor, a bit more hero shooter involved, Garena Free Fire is the name of it, and you can get that from both the App Store and Google Play Store right now for free if you want. Out and about this week, and perhaps a little bit of last week as well, Sky Children of the Light came out, which is arguably the biggest release of the last fortnight or so, because it comes from The Journey Lads. So that game company is the name. So they're the folks behind Flow, and then Flower, and then eventually Journey, which are, I guess, experiential games, which is a very like ethereal, wafty way of describing games where you just interact with things mostly for the pleasure of interacting with them, rather than trying to beat something or necessarily using like huge amounts of skill or something. It's all about pun intended, The Journey. And this follows on from those three games. I think it follows on almost directly from Journey, it feels like. As I've played a bit of it, and it does feel like a spiritual successor, like almost a sequel to it. I don't know, did you play Journey or any of these games?
I did, yeah. Before I even knew it was from that game company, just looking at the screenshots and the gameplay of it, like it looks very reminiscent of the last stages of Journey, where you're sort of ascending up into that game world's version of heaven or whatever it is. Very reminiscent of that, and from what I've heard, like very thematically similar, interested in sort of testing empathy and in terms of the multiplayer sort of engagements that you'll have, these wordless engagements with other players, and everybody helping each other in a really nice way that you don't often see in games. And I think a lot of that is just like stripping away the chat and being able to actually talk to these people and just having to rely on basic gameplay mechanics in order to communicate, and hopefully that spurs on, as I said, empathy and then wanting to help other people and show them, especially in this one, because there's lots of, I hear, like hidden secrets and stuff. So even more sort of grind for people to help each other and guide each other through this world together. And yeah, it just sounds like a lovely game. Haven't played it. Will do eventually. Very much like Journey. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I've had a go, and immediately it does feel like Journey. The first few seconds of it when you're playing it, you go, ah, here we go. Yeah, I played this. I know what the score is. So yes, you're taking control of a nameless character who doesn't speak. You don't have any attack powers or anything like that. The idea is you just drag around on the left side of the screen to move, camera with the right. That's your lot for the beginning. Then you gain the ability to charge what is effectively a cape, which allows you to initially jump and then allows you to soar and kind of fly, glide through the air. To do a long jump, which then becomes actual full-on flying later in the game. And the idea is you move between like visual markers. You can just see something on the horizon, which looks like you should probably go there. So you do, you wander over there. And the world itself has got that desert look at the beginning of Journey that you see, where you're kind of surfing down the crests of hills and wandering into caves and mountains and things. But then after a little bit, you actually get catapulted into the air and you're flying literally through the clouds. And that's when you get the title come up, which is quite nice, about kind of 15 minutes into the game. And you fly near the clouds, which recharges your cape to allow you to keep sort of ascending. And then eventually you touch down on land and you're in a much more green, grassy area. And again, like with Journey, you do run into other people who are online. And I guess the surprise element's lost, perhaps, if you've played Journey. Because one of the fun things about Journey was I didn't know anything about it going in. I deliberately avoided reviews because I liked Flower. Mm. And when another character appeared, you're like, oh, the game's got some NPCs in it. And then after a while, you just kind of got that, oh, this is another person. This is another player. That's kind of wandered into my game just from the way that it was acting in a slightly, you know, it acted human. It was jumping up and down on the spot and being a bit of a twat, you know, in a nice way. Like you could tell that it wasn't an AI doing it. And then you realize, and then you had to kind of wave and jump and just move to communicate and send a little noise or ding or whatever it was. And that was the only way you could make contact. And then you would like just accompany or even help one another, like one of you distracting while the other moved forward. In this game, it's got that as well. You can see a lot more characters wandering around in the form of kind of ghosts. And then you can, I think, give them a candle is the idea. And then they become solid and you can follow them throughout the game and you can meet up with them later on. I've only played about an hour of it, so I'm about maybe like, I think, a third of the way through. I think it's between 2 and 4 hours as a complete playthrough, but it's got a different ending you can replay through as well. There are some light puzzles in there. There is some stuff involved where, you know, you have to communicate with other people as well in order to solve the puzzles, but largely the game is all about the wonder. It's all about you strolling through these areas and seeing lovely, enchanting, magical things, and wall paintings appearing as you go past them, and you're saving, I think there are spirits wandering around the world. The general sense I get is that this is like the afterlife. This is, if Journey was about this kind of the end of your life and this inevitable crawl towards the end, towards death, this feels a little bit more like, all right, what happens after, even though it's not explicitly said or anything. And it does have the same kind of magical, otherworldly, ethereal feel of that. Some people are going to play this and be like, what, you don't do anything. This is not a game. This is barely anything. And I get that. So maybe if you played Journey and you thought that it was just a lot of fuss about nothing, this isn't going to be for you. but I'm a sucker for this kind of stuff. And it's really working for me at the moment. I haven't finished it yet, so I'll have to go back. But our review was very, very positive. Dan Sullivan did the full review. Really liked it, gave it a gold award, and felt that it really built on Journey's multiplayer system, and it does a lot more with it. So we highly recommend this one. Sky Children of the Light is the full name, and you can get that on iOS at the moment, and we're hoping for it to go over onto Android at a later date, but we'll have to wait for that to happen.
Pre-registrations are open now for the Android version.
Oh, really?
I've signed up myself, yeah. But there's no release date, as you say, but you can pre-register if you'd like. I don't think there's any sort of incentives to do so, but may as well. You know, it's free, and it sounds really good.
Yeah, get it done. Get involved.
Get it done.
So Hyperlight Drifter has just arrived a matter of hours ago on iPad and iPhone, which is a turn up for the books. This has come over from consoles where it was released a year or so ago, I think. Maybe a year or two ago, even.
Well, the PC version was 2016 and the console one, I think, was a couple years after that or a year after that. So, yeah, it's been maybe 3 years old now.
So it is a sort of top-down 2D battler, which is all about speed, difficulty, and looking absolutely beautiful. God, it's such a good-looking game. So you've played this a bunch, haven't you?
I have. Yeah, I was going to say I suffered through that. I very much enjoyed it. It's one of those games that you really have to commit fully to because the bosses are like, you know, just hitting a brick wall every time. Perhaps even more so than in like Dark Souls, where if you do encounter a boss that's almost impossible or seems that way, you can grind it out and you can, you know, sort of create your own easy mode from there. Hyperlight Drifter sort of demands that you master its mechanics in order to get through the majority of it. It's not the sort of thing you can just grind your way to success. And yeah, just absolutely gorgeous pixel art. Really one of my favorite video game scores from Disaster Piece, who actually did the Fez soundtrack and It Follows. And I believe he also
Which is so good.
Under the Silver Lake, which I haven't actually seen yet. I don't think anybody's seen it, unfortunately, here in the
UK. I've actually got it queued up. That's on the list because it got very mixed response and it's like too long and it really annoyed people. So I am massively up for it.
No, absolutely. Well, it's had like a second, I know this is not game related, but it's had like a second wave of sort of appreciation after the initial sort of tepid response to it. Okay. So a lot of people saying like, yeah, why was this poo-pooed originally? Because it's actually really, really good. So yeah, I'm absolutely looking forward to see that. Anyway, back to games. Hyperlight Drifter is just a terrific game. Know what you're getting in for, though. It is not, while there are comparisons to Zelda, it is by no means as simple as an experience as the earlier Zelda games.
The combat is very simple in some ways. Like there's a limited move set. It's not like you get loads and loads and loads of upgrades and you learn combos. It's just a very basic bare bones thing that you need to master.
Kind of like Sekiro in the way that you have a very simple set of moves and almost like a kind of rhythm action sort of challenge where you're just constantly aiming to dodge dash and knowing, like, just getting that timing down and perfecting it, as opposed to, as I said, just grinding it out and gradually being able to overpower enemies that way. Like, it is, it's almost totally skill-based in a really interesting way. I think, like, while it is difficult, it is totally doable. It's not, it's not hard for the sake of being hard. And, the world is just, like, so good to explore. Initially kind of difficult because it is open-ended. There are multiple paths you can take. Again, much like Dark Souls, but eventually you'll sort of realize what you can and can't do initially, where you should kind of be going, and then, you just take it from there. Like, it's a hard game to get into, but once you're there, it's great. Really good game.
So the question is, do you reckon that this will work as well on a touchscreen? I should say we've got this on the joint account. I haven't played it yet because, again, just back in the country. But do you think something like this will work? We'll confirm it later on. We'll talk about it next week. But touchscreen for this kind of precision, you reckon?
I think, like, as you say, because the controls themselves are pretty straightforward and simple, it is more a matter of just getting it down, to perfection. I think it could work quite well. My main concern would just be whether the frame rate is consistent, because if it's not, that's going to be a real challenge. I think the controls should translate pretty well just because of their simplicity.
Spoilers, the early notes have been very good for this, so apparently it does sound like they've done a good job with the port, but our review will be up very early next week, so we won't give you the official thumbs up or thumbs down just yet. But it is available on iOS. It's, I think, $6.99 or around about £5-6 as well. So, you know, it's more on the premium end, but it's a proper good game. We will give you the official feedback on it via PG. Check out the review when it goes live next week. Now, a few things that I haven't played. Well, I guess, I mean, I've played this, but not this particular thing. So Civ 6 came out on originally iPad, then it came down onto iPhone sometime last year. We've now got the first of two updates. So the Rise and Fall update has just arrived on iOS, and we've also got confirmation that Gathering Storm is going to be coming out later in the year. So it's the first major expansion to arrive on the App Store. We've got a very detailed rundown of it all because I think Dan knows his Civilization. So he's got a right big breakdown of what it all involves. And it's completely like feature complete. It's everything that you get on the PC version, only now you can just do it mobile. So if you are a Civ player, that's extremely good news for you. It's via an in-app purchase, so you'll need to cough up for it. I don't know exactly how much it costs is the thing. But if you are Civ player, you've probably already downloaded this. So, you know, crack on, have fun with that. Another game that's come out recently that you did the review for, actually. Automachef, I'm going to pronounce it.
Yes, Automachef. I think that is correct. I never actually said out loud before.
No, it just occurred to me reading it. So I guess because I keep getting called up on the pronunciation of Nier Automata or Nier Automata.
I go with the latter just because it's easier for me to say, but I don't know which is correct.
I remember seeing people getting shouted out for saying Sekiro, which is wrong because it's Sekiro.
Ugh, I can't be doing with those people. Come on.
Burned, mate. Burned. But yeah, this is a what looks to me like a cooking thing. I haven't played it. What's the deal with this?
It is an astonishingly challenging puzzle game, puzzle game, where the idea is that you have to automate the process of, first of all, creating food and then delivering it. All the way from just, you know, from a burger bun to a finished burger with all the ingredients added. It's by far and away the hardest game I've played in quite some time, just because of the amount of freedom that it gives you in just manipulating every element of your machine. Because what you're ultimately doing is creating this massive purpose-built machine to sort of meet specific orders that come along. While it is difficult, it's really quite accessible, which I know might sound odd, but like it allows you to mess up and to repeat as many times as you like, which you'll need to do because you might think, oh, I've put an hour into this machine, I can't see anything wrong with it. As soon as you hit play, inevitably there will be like five things that go wrong at the same time, and you'll have to go and mess with them all. As I said, just because of the amount of freedom that you're given. It's really kind of hands-off experience. It is going to be a pretty niche title, but I think for the people that want that sort of thing, like a Factorio sort of experience, this is probably the best that you're going to get. There's just so much to do, and it is super, super satisfying when you put the effort in and you finally get to see your burgers being delivered, and you know, you get your I know this sounds so ridiculous, but
it's weird to look at because it's got the 3D isometric look of what's the multiplayer chef game that I'm thinking of?
Overcooked,
which I played last year and decided was fantastic because it's got almost the same graphical style as that, as in like the cartoon food and everything, and it's tile based, so it looks similar, but it's just like they've kicked the chefs out and now you're plonking down bits some machinery on the tiles to make this snaking conveyor belt which goes all over the place to try and take the food and then cook it and then grill it and then dunk it and then put buns on it. And yeah, I guess the thing with these games is it's all about these fantastic machines, a game, the efficiency, isn't it? It's getting the perfect machine so that you take out all the unnecessary bits and it goes through the shortest possible route and potentially the most stylish to get the end result. I think it taps into that sort of perfectionism.
Yeah. To the extent where I was up multiple nights through the whole night, pretty much just desperately trying to get above 90% efficiency and always failing every time. I think the most I got was like 89% or 88. I gave in. I will go back to it eventually because the campaign is really lengthy, and there are all other modes as well. There's a mode where you become like a kitchen manufacturer, and you have to build these purpose-built kitchens. I could easily see people clocking in like dozens of hours into this. There's just so much to do if you really enjoy the core building and tinkering with all these different machines. It's great. It's a really, really good game.
So Automachef is the name, all one word. That's available on the Switch, which I should have said up front, but didn't. And you can get that right now off the eShop if you fancy a look at it. go back to mobile for a moment. This is close to my heart. Flashback, which is the from 1992. This is a very similar game to Another World, which is another one that if you were perhaps an Amiga owner all the way back there in the very early 90s, you'll have played these games. I know that it got revamped for consoles not so long ago, so they released it, even got a boxed version. And it's... See, the thing with these is I think it's regarded very, very fondly in a nostalgic way, and I regard it very fondly as well. I was a huge fan of this. Tough as Nails. I was never actually sure. I'm not sure it's a brilliant game, to be honest with you, but I played it loads and thought it was amazing, and it had a very cool, for the time, intro sequence, which is basically done by rotoscoping something that the dudes had filmed in the same way they did with Prince of Persia. So at the time, it produced what was considered very lifelike animation and movement and stuff. In reality, the way this game plays out is it's, you know, the walking is very stiff and the rolling and the jumping has to be like pixel perfect. And it's not this smooth, graceful platformer. It's far more mechanical than that. But it's here and available on iOS and Android for the very first time. We've got this on the account. Again, it's on my list of things to play. I cannot wait to see how this handles because it's awkward enough playing it with, you know, keyboards and that sort of thing. So playing it with touchscreen is going to be fascinating. However, it's already got an awful lot of love online. And I wonder how much that is just because people remember it and think it's great. One thing that I should point out that almost everyone I've spoken to who's played it has said, which is use the classic controls. They do have an option there for swipey touchscreen, and apparently it doesn't work out, which doesn't surprise me in the slightest. So use the classic controls, which will be presumably projected, you know, left and right buttons and that. But yeah, a sci-fi platformer puzzler, really. It's one of those single screen ones where you walk off one screen and it blips into another screen. Visually, it looks like they've done that thing where if you get an emulator and you turn that edge smoothing rounding thing on. Obviously, neither you or I have ever dabbled with emulators.
No. Most definitely not.
So it'll be terrible and wrong. But I have seen people do it, of course. And when it starts to look like a weird, like a painting, because it smooths the hard edges off, which I'm not 100%, I'm not a huge fan of that, but they've done it here. Maybe they've got a version where you can switch to the old version. That'd be nice. Actually, I think that's what it is. From the main menu, you can select 1993 or classic mode. I wonder if that's just controls or visuals. Ooh, now I really have to play it. Cool. All right. Well, this is currently available for iPhone and Android. It is £4.99 or $4.99. Flashback Mobile is the full title, and that is out right now. I think that will do for this week. Thank you for bearing with us during our downtime. We will be back again next week, perhaps with more people, get everybody involved. We'll have a full kind of like four-person podcast at some point. That'll be larks. Cameron, great to have you here today.
Thank you. It's been nice to be here.
And hopefully come back and join us again in the future. And you guys listening, do the whole liking, subscribing, etc. And come back and join us as well next week for more. Bye-bye.
Bye.